Hi, I'm Josh Proctor. I'm a cultural strategist, and this is Untalented by Unknown and Canva.
Imagine I am a 10-year-old. How would you explain to me what you do?
I think this is a good question because I don't think I can explain what I do to like a 35-year-old, let alone a 10-year-old. But the best way that I think I would describe it is I try and think about or uncover the hidden reasons behind people, why people like what they like, do what they do, act the way they act or believe, and then figure out how those might be changing going into the future. And then once I've figured out those things, try and write kind of compelling stories for how a brand might make meaning for those people with all of that information in mind.
What would you say is something that helped you move faster in your career?
I think there's a couple things. I think the first thing that I would say is genuinely having a passion or interest in culture or the world or something random or niche. So I remember when I was growing up, I would spend hours and hours on end reading like r/hip hop heads, the like subreddit, or reading like sneaker blogs or camping out for trainers and all of that stuff. I'm like, oh my God, I'm never going to get those hours back now. But actually, the time spent understanding the way that the kind of dynamics in these communities work, the way that people think about brands within those spaces, or think about just kind of like cultural outputs within those spaces, and really being a part of that as well, allowed me to really take that thinking and apply it to so many other different challenges. So I think one of the things that whenever I speak to younger people in the industry, I'm like, have an interest outside of what's going on in work and dive fully into it.
In terms of money, so being like a brand storyteller slash like culture strategist, what can you say the top earner in that world would earn?
I mean, my first answer to this question is like, come, let's do this again when I actually am the top earner in the industry, and I can tell you the answer to that. British people don't talk about money, right? So it's very hard to know what anyone makes. I would say that it's largely dependent on geography and location as well. So I think in the US, you're earning, I think, mid six figures if you're at the sort of peak of your powers. I think in the UK, you're probably looking at sort of 200, 300K as a sort of very senior person.
What would you say is one cultural idea that we keep romanticizing that actually might be a dead end?
I think the thing that is inanely stupid, in my opinion, and that is going absolutely nowhere, is this idea of soft clubbing. I don't know if you've seen this
What is
recently.
it?
So soft clubbing is a term that's kind of emerged recently, I think probably in the kind of LinkedIn warrior sphere, to categorize taking the elements of club culture that revolve around music specifically, and then transplanting them in spaces that kind of take away a lot of the friction of clubbing. So you might have seen matcha raves or raves in a coffee shop or a daytime party in like a build your own salad chain. I think there's some genuine issues with them, right? And I think the issue is that a lot of the time for younger people, there's been this real push recently to remove a lot of the friction from socializing, from community, from coming together. And lots of young people are like, I want community, I want third spaces, I want all of this stuff. But actually, when you remove that friction, you remove a lot of what makes those spaces important in the first place. So when it comes to club culture, for example, or soft clubbing, a lot of the kind of key elements of what makes clubbing culturally valuable is that there is friction embedded into it. It is about going to somewhere that is perhaps a little bit unknown. A public space shouldn't be somewhere where there's consensus. It shouldn't be somewhere where there's total harmony. That actually, this kind of negotiation of difference is really important. And what I see with these kind of like matcha raves, which even the term is really stupid, but what I see with them is actually a load of sort of young professionals going into spaces that have been stripped in kind of any of the intimidation, any of the challenge, any of the friction, to essentially spend time in a place that's aesthetic with a bunch of people that look like you and act like you and have the same interests as you. And ultimately, it goes nowhere. There's no cultural value there. It's about an aesthetic virality that just dies at the point of interaction. I think this idea that we have to always be comfortable in a space is kind of leading us to a sort of cultural milieu that doesn't move forward in any way because of, there's no friction there.
What was the last insight you shared that no one believed, but you still stand by?
I think it was kind of coming out of the pandemic. There was this period in time where, especially in kind of fashion or the luxury industries, there was a lot of conversation around democratization of luxury. And at the time, I had a lot of problems with that terminology for a couple of reasons. One, because I don't think anyone using that term actually knew what democratization meant in the first place. And I think they were just using it to mean that more people could buy more expensive stuff, which I don't think is what democratization means. And the second is that I think they were conflating this idea of democratization with a move towards trying to figure out how you make people belong or how you find kind of identity through brands or belonging through brands. And I remember at the time I was at a previous agency and we had a PR agency who were kind of pitching us to do industry press stories. And I remember sitting on a call being like, I want to write this story about how actually this idea of like having a live stream fashion show that democratizes fashion somehow doesn't actually democratize fashion because opening things out in that way without actually giving people meaningful ways to contribute isn't democratization. And we had this whole back and forth around the idea that, to be honest, belonging doesn't come from when everyone's invited. There has to be some level of exclusion in there. If everyone's invited, then no one is fully a part of something. And I remember at the time, there was a lot of sort of pushback from the PR agency because it felt like the message that I was trying to say was somehow like anti-inclusion or sort of not being about inclusivity, which it absolutely wasn't. It was more to say that for someone to feel like they belong as part of something, it can't be with absolutely everyone in the world. And that also when there's this idea of democratizing something, if all you're trying to do, if the end goal of democratization is just more people can buy this thing, it's not democratization in the first place. So I think that kind of insight or way of thinking has been more accepted recently. You see lots of people talking about the idea of the value of kind of cultural gatekeeping and the idea of tastemakers and creating communities around brands. And really, a lot more thinking has gone into it. And so it's something that at that time I was like, I'm so passionate about this. And it kind of got shut down. And I was like, no, actually, I still believe this thing. And I probably should have written about it back then because
Wow.
it would have been maybe ahead of its time.
Choose one, make meaning or impact.
When I think about like why I do what I do, a lot of it is to be like, okay, if I can bring some meaning to that 12-year-old version of myself, then I can be happy with what I'm doing. That means a lot. So we should be trying to make meaningful things, and we should be trying to convey meaning through the work that we do to inspire like the 12-year-old Josh who was sat there like watching these campaigns, being like, oh my God, I'm gonna go like play basketball tomorrow.
How do you define cultural strategy in a world where trends shift overnight?
One of the really important things to separate is, I think, a little bit trends from culture in the first place. I think trends are culture, but they're not what's causing culture, or they're not the reasons or the whys behind cultural change. And so I think cultural strategy is about saying, yeah, okay, there's these trends happening in the world, and yeah, they're happening even quicker than perhaps they happened ever before. But what's driving them? What's the kind of cultural shifts that are shaping those things? And I think good cultural strategy acknowledges those whys and really works to embed meaning for brands or for an artist, a person within those whys, not just the kind of surface level trend as well.
What would you say is the biggest challenge in helping brands stay relevant without chasing every trend?
I think, first of all, if you chase every trend, that's like the opposite of relevance, right? Like, I think you can think of the person who's like trying really, really hard to be cool and their clothes end up wearing them rather than them wearing the clothes. So I think the first thing to say is like, if you chase every trend, there's no way that you're going to be relevant because it's not true to who you are, right? Like, it's not authentic to who you are. I think the other thing to say in terms of the challenges is that speed piece. And I think the actual setup of a business needs to be in such a way that the business can move at speed, but also have conviction behind the decision that it makes. So you don't have to chase every trend, and as I've said, you probably shouldn't chase every trend. But if there is something that you feel is relevant to your brand, you should be able to move quickly on it. Otherwise, the culture is gonna move past you.
How do you balance data-driven insights with human intuition in your strategic approach?
My intuition is entirely based on hundreds of different data points that I've internalized over a long period of time. Yes, for a specific project that is kind of out of my specific cultural milieu, of course you're relying on reports and data that you kind of look at, but so much of that intuition is made up by data anyway. So I think you have to trust your gut. And I think that's one thing that comes back to the kind of like advice or thoughts to my younger self or what helped me progress through my career. It's like there's a conviction in what you say and what you do, and having that conviction is really important. So believe what you say and truly believe it. Like, don't go present something that you don't believe in. But the more that you do that, the more that you'll trust your instinct and your gut as you move forward. And I think the ultimate kind of arbiter of the right decision is your gut and your instinct, because otherwise it would be someone else in your position. So you have to believe that.
What would your life slogan be?
There's a Welsh sociologist and sort of critical theorist called Raymond Williams. He has a really famous line, which is culture is ordinary. And I think that idea of kind of owning and championing the ordinariness and the everydayness of culture has been something that's been really important to my life and to my work, to say that it doesn't have to be just what goes on in an art gallery or increasingly a TikTok trend. It's the underlying things, it's the everyday, and kind of acknowledging that is really, really important.
What is the most unhinged thing you've asked ChatGPT?
I must say, I'm not like a massive ChatGPT user. I used to do copywriting for a very well-known like luxury cosmetics brand, or like cosmetics and like beauty. I remember when I first started working for them, they were asking me to do like copywriting drops for like lipstick, and I have no idea how to write about lipstick. I've never worn lipstick. I don't know the like material properties of lipstick. So I probably looks quite unhinged that there's like six different questions in there about like lipstick and face scrub and like all of this stuff. But I promise you, it was trying to figure out what to say about lipstick.